The following program is brought to you by Podcast One. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now here's your host, Rory O'Malley.
Hey there, this is Rory O'Malley, your host for the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Thank you so much for listening. My guest today is Vella Lavelle, who is currently starring in the Geffen Playhouse's production of Witch. And you definitely should check it out. It's an amazing play. She is such a fantastic performer. You probably know her from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which was on the CW for four seasons. She played Heather. Her story of how she got that part and her story in general is just fantastic. She's a real delight. Here is my conversation with Vella Lavelle. Hi, Vella.
Hi.
Welcome to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thank you so much.
We are in the founder's room.
Yeah, I've never been here, actually.
I haven't either. I mean, we're not founders. This feels like we've broken into a secure location,
yeah.
But you can tell there's some really important people who've been in
it
here.
It feels like there's a lot of history in this room.
A lot of history, mm-hmm. And this is just another historic moment to add to the Founders Room,
yeah.
Our conversation.
Yeah, we are part of the founding of the Geffen now.
It's so good to see you, first of all.
I know.
We've only really gotten to hang out like a handful of times.
Yes.
But I am such a huge, huge fan of yours. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, immediately I was like, oh my God, I love her, you know. And then The Big Sick, you were so fantastic in.
Oh, that's really sweet.
And so you have been hanging out with a lot of people that I knew, especially Dave Hall and like folks. So I was like, oh, we got to be friends too. So we've been like friends adjacent for a while.
Friends adjacent, yeah. But now we're so close physically right now.
Yeah, That's why I brought you here, to sit close to me.
Yeah.
And so that we can make it a
friendship,
true friendship
happen. Yeah. Well, I have to say, likewise, you were so amazing in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and in Hamilton. I was like fangirling all over you when we went to see it.
That was so cool because you came with Dave, right?
Yeah, we came to see it in LA, yeah.
Yes, who played White Josh
on the show in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
And you guys came, and I remember when we were going out to sign autographs, the entire crowd started screaming for you guys. Because they were, of course, the Hamilton fans are huge Crazy Ex-Girlfriend
fans.
Well,
and so we did a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend live show at Radio City in May, and Lin-Manuel actually came for our last night because him and Gabrielle Ruiz did In the Heights together.
Right.
So they kind of did this fun like number, and he was like, what did he say? He was like, the thing is, the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend fans and the Hamilton fans, like, in a Venn diagram are a circle. Like, it's
so
just
true.
The same.
It's so true.
Yeah, so I think that attracts.
Absolutely. So let's talk about why we're here in the Founders Room at the Geffen Playhouse.
Yeah.
You are in a play here. What is it called?
I am. It's an amazing new play by the incredible playwright Jen Silverman called Witch.
Okay.
And it's going to be at the Geffen. We just started rehearsals last week, so we're like just in the middle of the second week of rehearsals, which is usually when you just start being like, what am I doing? What does it all mean?
Right.
But it'll all get worked out by August
20th. Okay.
We start previews, and then I think we open the 29th.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's in the smaller theater, which I did a play last year here.
Oh, you did.
Significant Other, and that was in the big theater.
Right. Yeah.
So it'll be kind of cool to like be at the Geffen, but in a totally different space, which is way more intimate.
Yes.
And I think it's a really great play for those of you in the LA area.
I've read it. I haven't seen it.
Have
yet.
You read it?
Yes.
Jen is just like so smart and so clever and also really heartbreaking, and it's an amazing mix of all of those things.
So let's talk a little bit about the rehearsal process for anything, but like I think people are really interested in when you're working on a play that it's not brand new, but it's pretty new, right?
Yeah, I think they did it in Chicago with the same director, Marty Lyons, who's this amazing director who's based in Chicago, and they worked on it together there. So it's had that one life, and now this is its second life. And I'm assuming it will have another life after this. But yeah, so we're kind of in the process of making this play.
So are they making any changes?
Yeah, like we just, I just came from rehearsal and we were just like printing out new pages.
Wow.
You know,
the
like,
collating.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
what it's all about. It's all about, do you have like, so when you get new pages in a new play or musical, you're constantly going to your mailbox or something, and then you have to collate the pages, put the new ones in.
It becomes like scrapbooking kind of.
Yeah. It is. It's a crafts, arts and crafts project.
Yeah. You're like, you turn into like a kindergartner and you're just like, oh, this goes here. And then like, here's my labels and my highlighters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just becomes like an art project.
Some people are better at it than others. I'm terrible. I'm just like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Can someone just give me a new script? I can't do this.
Yeah. Cause a lot of times you've like written all these notes on one page and then you'll get a new page with new dialogue. And then you're like, I can't copy that. And then you completely forget all the notes to yourself that you wrote.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
But I don't know. I think like for me, like being a part of a new play experience is like the best.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like TV in a way. It is.
I mean, being in a part of a new play is probably the thing that prepares you the most for episodic television,
yes,
I would imagine.
100%. Yeah. And the fact that we get like the playwright in the room is so invaluable.
It's not, that doesn't happen very often, especially when you're not like in New York or
exactly.
That's
like,
really unique.
Yeah. I think it's really rare and it's so cool to have her here as a part of the process. And, you know, it's one of those things, if you have a question about the line, you can literally just be like, what did you mean?
What's this one about?
Can you just tell me, instead of like, you know, as actors, we're always just like guessing and like, I think they meant this and it's because of their backstory. And she can either be like, and she's wonderful about being, you know, like encouraging us to come up with our own stuff. Like she doesn't have this like kind of, set idea that's like, this is what, you know, this line means exactly. Like we're kind of experimenting, but
find it together.
Yeah. But if there's like a way she can kind of push us in the right direction, she will. And that's so, it's those moments that are so special and exciting about working on a new play.
Yeah. Well, especially because I always liken it to having a suit or a dress made for you by the designer. Like it's tailor made, this character. Like if something doesn't work in this scene, because it's you playing it, then it's changed because you got to.
They're like, well, this needs to work.
It needs to work. So
Can we do?
It's because it's your voice. It's your body. It's who you're the instrument. So that's what they have to play with.
That's what you have. So
sorry.
Sorry, I didn't make that line work.
Okay, so you're going to have a bit of a run here. You're working on the show. You have to make a lot of changes. Have you have a theater background, especially you went to the prestigious college of...
Holyard? Or as Julie's Art School. Julie's Art School. I went to Juilliard for grad school and I went to NYU for undergrad.
Oh, nice.
So I did.
What did you study undergrad at NYU?
Also theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of those studios?
Mm-hmm. One of those.
Well, I know they have different ones.
I did experimental,
which
means I like rolled on the floor and kind of made sound. Really expressed myself. And then I did.
For 4 years.
I did that for 3 years. And then I did the classical studio, the Shakespeare studio.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So I kind of got an interesting mix of things.
Okay. So you.
At NYU. Yeah.
You've had a full on theater background, but. Did you go right into TV and film world or?
No, not at all. So I went to NYU and NYU is an incredible school, but it's so big. Like it's the undergrad program, is so huge. So it's kind of like, they're just so huge, which is why they have all these studios.
Yeah.
So in a way they can't I don't know that any theater school can prepare you for being an actor and the reality of it versus like, you know, the educational little.
Yeah. You just got to do it.
You just have to do it. Yeah, exactly. So in hindsight, I don't know how much they could have done, but I felt very much because it was so big. I felt like I graduated on Friday and on Monday, I did not know what to do. Like I was like, wait, what do I do? Like, where do I go?
Right.
So I ended up kind of, finding a lot of like community off Broadway stuff, right after I graduated, and did a lot of, like devised theater at like La Mama or like the Flea Theater.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And did stuff with, I don't know if you know who Elizabeth Suedos is.
I don't think I do.
She's this amazing, she was an amazing, she passed away a few years ago. She was this amazing composer and theater artist, and she worked at NYU, and she did the musical Runaways, if you know that.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
The Trojan Women at La Mama, like in the 70s.
Wow.
So she had worked at NYU, so a lot of us kind of like, she would kind of do these kind of ragtag theater projects and performances and stuff. So a lot of us just kind of ended up being in her fold and kind of doing these like little one-off gigs like here and there.
Right.
So I did that. It was kind of,
were you getting paid?
Oh, barely. Yeah.
How did you survive? What was your,
like a million jobs.
Yeah.
Just like a million restaurants. I'm a terrible waiter, but I did my best.
Yeah.
Which I think in hindsight was maybe me trying to protect myself from not getting too invested in it.
I know. You start to worry, like, if this works out and I start making, like, a really good tip money at the end of the night, maybe I'll just, like,
I'll
give up on this
forever.
Other... Yeah.
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 For
it's
sure.
Scary.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah. I'm just going to not be good at this.
It's a defense mechanism, not an inability to be good.
To be good.
At
no.
It.
No. Yeah. Or it's maybe just me telling myself that to make myself feel better.
Right.
But yeah, so I did, oh my gosh. Yeah. So many jobs. I was a nanny.
Yeah.
I was, a nanny babysitter, hostess, waitress, a personal assistant, personal organizer. I don't even know.
Wow.
Like so many jobs.
Okay.
I think I've worked at most restaurants in the Union Square area.
Oh really? Is that where you're?
Because of
NYU.
I just kind of knew that area. So I would just kind of hop from restaurant to restaurant around there. But it was a really important time for me, like after I graduated from NYU and just wasn't given literally anything because I didn't know how to get an agent. I didn't know. I was just looking in backstage and like hoping friends would be like, do you want to be in my like 10-minute play or something?
Right.
But it was a really good period of time because I really was like completely supporting myself through odd jobs, you know, and then doing it as like something that I chose to do and loved to do and just never expected to get paid for it,
right.
I think.
Right.
So I think it actually, in a weird way, made me realize that I do want to do it and it doesn't really matter if like the opportunity is there or not or I'm getting paid or not.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I want to do this. Like,
right.
Kind of made me know that I want to do it even in the times when there's not a job.
Yeah, if you're like literally having to find other means to feed yourself and you still want to do that thing, like clearly it's your passion. Clearly, you know, like you're doing it not just because it's going to pay the bills.
Yeah, and I think you have to ask yourself that no matter what kind of artist you are, of like, would I do this for free? And if you do want to do it for free, then you probably will have the stamina to get through the times that are harder.
Because you know? Probably will be doing it for free for a lot, for years.
Mostly because you'll be doing it for free.
You will be.
I mean, I feel like actors are like, you tell them that there's going to be free pizza and they're like,
absolutely.
Cool, we'll be there.
Done.
It's
deal.
Just, yeah, it's like the love of it is such a huge part of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that you end up sacrificing so much just to be able to be a part of that artistic experience and to thrive in it. And then when you get out there in the real world and you're like, oh, it's so rare that any opportunity you get. It's not, you know, when you grew up, there were how many plays were there around your neighborhood or your high school? You could like sign up for all of them and you're, you know, you're doing like three at a time.
Right.
But then you get out there in the real world and it's
it's way weirder to have a job. It feels like the norm is that you don't. And then it's like a fun surprise when you do.
Right. So how many years were you out there in the off-Broadway world?
The weird it was more like off-Broadway.
Sure, sure. I mean, it's all
very
you know.
Off.
Yeah, yeah.
4 years.
Okay.
So 4 years in between I just didn't think I was going to go to grad school. So I was just kind of living my life. And then I discovered Williamstown Theater Festival and started going there during the summers. And there's a lot of grad school people there.
Yeah.
And like a lot of NYU, Yale, and Juilliard people would kind of go there as they were in training.
Right.
And I started in William. Have you done Williamstown?
No, no.
Oh, it's so, you should do something there.
I'd
sometime.
Love to. Yeah. No, I know it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Let's go.
Okay. Sounds good.
But it's this incredible place for a million reasons. It's like beautiful and it's like camp. It's like theater camp. Yeah. And there's one bar in town and you're just like doing Chekhov and it's lovely. But, I think a really useful thing about it is there's this really clear like hierarchy there. Mm. So there's the apprentices who are like literally like sweeping like outside the theater. And then there's the non-ex who have like little parts. And then there's the equity actors who have like the big parts on the right. main stage. And it's this kind of like this weird ecosystem where you're seeing that like, oh, this person was, you know, an apprentice the first summer and then they became a non-ec the next summer. Yeah. And then, oh my God, 2 years later, they're, it's like, it feels like in this very wild west of, you know, acting in the business, it felt like this kind of little insular place where right. things kind of made sense.
In a business where there's no ladder.
No.
They have created this ladder
exactly.
that you can climb.
Which is really comforting. Yeah. You know, and especially like at the end of a summer at Williamstown, you know everyone's name. It's a really small town, so you're just like walking down the street and you're like, hey, you know? And it's just this really like
you're comforting. Like, hey.
You're like, hey.
Sounds amazing.
And I've taken that into my own life.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's basically the dream. Like
yeah.
being in a community like that.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people from, I went to Carnegie Mellon, not mm-hmm. a lot, but like a handful of people, they went to theater companies mm-hmm. around the country and they stayed till now.
Yeah.
You know, like they've bought so houses in different parts
right.
of the country and it's
and
amazing.
That used to be like the deal,
yeah.
right? There used to be all these repertory companies
right.
and you could actually just like make a living doing a bunch of plays.
Right. And you were just a part of, they yeah. were like, find the parts for you. You
right. Know, like, yeah, I mean, design
that,
it around
that sound
you.
Nice?
They had it really good.
It's kind of like the old Hollywood system, you know, like you used to
yeah.
be, you were at MGM and like, whatever shows they had,
yeah.
whatever movies they had for you, they'd put you in
yeah.
something. I mean, I hear it was terrible, but it sounds nice.
It sounds
so I was like, oh, I wish I was like under contract
yeah.
at like a studio and they just tell
like,
me
find
when
a part
work.
For me, kid.
Yeah. Like, I know it gives you no artistic choice, but like.
It sounds great. There's something about it that sounds great.
I know. I don't know. I was born in the wrong decade. No, I'm a homosexual man. I was born
no,
in the
it's
wrong
right.
decade.
No, it's right. It's right.
Okay.
We take it back.
Okay.
Things are better now.
Okay. So you wind up at Juilliard, is that because you
yeah.
hear about these different programs?
Well, right. So I think I was, as someone who I kind of came to theater later. I mean, later I came to it in college, but
yeah.
I thought I was going to be a piano player up
really?
Until, yeah, like classical piano up until
wow.
I was 18. So when I went to theater school, it was like this exciting thing, but I felt like I didn't really come out of my shell really until towards the end of theater school. And especially you're so young at 18. Like I felt like I was like graduated and I was 21. And I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
what do I do with these things that yeah. I know are in the back of my brain somewhere? So I think, going to Williamstown, seeing all these grad school people, seeing these amazing, you know, actors get to work. I was like, oh, I guess grad school is a thing that people do and they just go and they just really work and they get really good. And like, that sounds like something I'd be interested in. So I decided I wanted to go back to NYU grad. So I was like, I'm just going to apply there. And then I had a mentor who was like, I think you should apply to like another place. So it's not just like one. And I was like,
right.
okay. So I was like, I guess I'll do Yale. And then she had directed something. This woman, Amanda Charlton, who used to run Williamstown, had directed at Juilliard. And she was like, you should also do Juilliard. And I was like, okay. So weirdly, Juilliard was like the one that I was like not even
what
thinking
else?
About. Yeah. And NYU was like, I was like, I gotta go there. And I ended up not getting into NYU, getting called back at Yale, but not getting in and then getting into Juilliard. So it was like this weird thing where I was
isn't
like,
isn't that funny?
Yeah. It was this weird thing where I was like, I did not even plan to like go to grad school. And now all of a sudden, like there's this one I did just wasn't thinking about at all.
Right.
But it kind of was like,
and but Juilliard is a 4-year program. So that's a big
is.
Commitment.
Yes. And that was part of my, what was scary about going was I was like this, and I was 25 at the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to be 29. So basically
oh my gosh,
dead.
So old.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be over.
But I mean, it's, we can laugh about it. because it is laughable, but yeah. also at the same time for a woman
for
in
sure
this business, for exactly. a man in this business. But I say that knowing that women are more mindful of their 20s because
100%
the business is so horrible
yeah.
to them.
Oh yeah. So it's this thing of like, I'm 25 right now. Like, should I just keep hustling on my own?
Right.
But I think I kind of ultimately was like, if I want to like do this with my life, which I know I do, like I should want to just work and like just
yeah.
give myself the opportunity to just fail for like a few years and just like mess up and do all these, you know, scenes and characters and really work on myself so that when I'm like done, I can actually like do this for
right.
hopefully longer than just my 20s, you
right.
know, like hopefully it'll like be a good foundation. So
you're walking into a really prestigious program at Juilliard at 25
mm-hmm.
with probably a lot of 18-year-olds.
100%.
What yeah. was that like? Because not to be like 25,
yeah, no.
you're like, you know everything,
it
but
was
it's going to feel very different.
Well, in our class was very unique in that. So for those of you who don't know, Juilliard is a, they mix their grad and their undergrad programs.
Mm.
And at the time, my class was the last class to not get a master's.
Oh.
So we just got, and like, it's just been like that since the beginning. Like, every class since group one has gotten just a diploma.
Okay.
If you were doing it as a secondary education. So half the class is usually 18 and coming in for college. And then usually half the class is grad, like have done college. And so our class, for whatever reason, all the women were older and all the men were younger.
Oh my God.
So we just were like, we're the old broads. I mean, we were all like 24, 25.
Right.
So it's kind of funny now to think about it, but we were all like, oh, we're all these old broads with these young chickens.
Oh
just,
my God.
And it was pretty much across. We had one guy, I think, who was doing it as grad school and one girl who was doing it
as an
undergrad. And otherwise it was, yeah. So it was weird for sure at first, but, pretty soon I would say within the first semester, it was weird. And then we just got over it and we were like, you're our men. And because at Juilliard, you only work with the people in your class.
Right.
So you're not getting to do another play and, you know, like mix with
intermingling with other.
There's
years.
No, yeah. What do you like? There's no co-ed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between the years.
You're not all auditioning for the big Juilliard.
The big
musical.
Number. Yeah. Exactly. So it was kind of this thing of there's 18 of us. We only have each other for four
right.
years. So you just kind of start to, the age just totally, it sounds weird, but it really starts to just not matter.
Right.
Because you're like, this is who you are. And I have to say some of the most mature people were not the older people. And some of the most, you know,
yeah.
immature people were not the young. It's like, it really,
yeah.
you start to be like, oh, it really has nothing to do with anything.
Sure.
You know?
Well, if you know what you want to do and you've worked hard enough to get to a program like that and you're determined,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter what age you are. Like, you're either going to sink or
yeah,
swim, right?
Yeah. Like, no, it's true. And I also think it's like, it was a great lesson in like being humble and being like, just because I'm older does not mean I know better.
Right.
Sometimes this person's definitely going to teach me something. And just because I'm older, like, yeah, I can, you know, teach them some things,
right.
but like, you know, it was very good, like, kind of stripping away of, like, what I think I know.
Right. I think
you
that
know?
It's also probably helped when you leave, because I can remember, this is, I'm admitting something, I can remember, you know, being a couple years out of school
mm-hmm.
and having people who graduated below me get out and get some, like,
yeah.
huge job. And
right.
I was like, well, that wasn't supposed to happen.
That's not fair.
Like, I'm yeah. a third-year senior, technically, so
yes,
I should be
yes.
getting this opportunity.
Well, isn't
you know?
It weird, too? The people you go to school with, you always see them in that context.
Yeah.
You're always like, you're a first year, and I'm a third year.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just
that's
not a
not,
thing.
That, that's not
never
the case
a thing.
Anymore.
That's not, yeah.
Yeah, it's a small little... Everything about being in an artistic community or an educational community is like being in this small little safe area where there are rules, where there is that ladder, where there is
mm-hmm.
like that safety net.
Right.
And when you're out of it, it's all gone.
Yeah.
So what happened when you left Juilliard?
When I left Juilliard, well, I ended up auditioning for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend like a month after graduation.
Wow.
So it was really fast. So it
yeah.
was like I graduated, I was going out on a bunch of auditions thinking I wasn't going to get any of them because it was like the first time in my life I'm like going out for TV stuff. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm used to rolling on the ground, you know, and like playing a bird, a mystical, so many mystical creatures have I played. But like, so it was this weird thing of like, oh, this new form, I'm just going to try a bunch of stuff out and I'm sure like none of it's going to work out. And so then I got it off of two tapes. Like I didn't even fly to LA.
Wow.
So I was in New York for both auditions and Skyped with Rachel Bloom and Aline Brush McKenna. And then the first time I found out I got it in New York. And the first time I flew out to LA was to do press for the show that I had. And I had done, my audition was two pages, one scene. And then I flew out for the TCAs, which is like, you know, the panel with all the journalists and stuff. And I was literally like, I met everyone the night before. Like, it was just so bonkers.
Wow.
Because usually you like have filmed the show and then you're doing.
Right. And then you're talking about it. But it was like, let's hit the ground running.
Yeah. I was like, hi, nice to meet you. It's going to be a great show. Like, I just could not answer any. I just kept saying it's going to be great. But I just literally.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. You're just like in the corner of the TCA is going,
yeah, like
gonna be great.
Rocking, just like it's gonna be great.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Had you been to Los Angeles?
I had been so I actually ended up getting, I got a pilot while I in my fourth year of Juilliard, and so that was like a crazy experience because that was my first TV audition, and I flew out for the test for that, which was the most nerve-wracking like experience ever, to go from like nothing to like what is happening. So I'd flown out for that. And then I was actually like born in Southern California and moved when I was 5 to New Mexico. So my first few years were here. So I don't know, like,
it's not like a foreign country to you the way that it is to me from Ohio.
I'm 100%.
Like,
yes.
Where am I? Why is it so warm?
Yes. Okay. Whereas sometimes I have weird flashbacks, like on the 101. I'm like, I've been here before.
Really?
It's really weird.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But so I hadn't really spent a lot of time as an adult here. Yeah. And pretty much my whole adult life was New York. So, it's definitely, different out here.
So you come and you start working on the show immediately, like you did press, and then it's just like, let's make the pilot.
Yeah.
Because they had done.
No, they had already, so with Crazy X, they'd already done the pilot at Showtime.
Yes.
And it didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
And then they shopped it around at the last second, the CW picked it up for the fall, which meant that, I mean, for Rachel and Aline, it was like, they didn't have a pilot. And then in May, all of a sudden they had a pilot and it was now going to be an hour, 18 episodes, you know, on the CW,
A
network show, on a network, you know, channel or whatever. So, yeah, so it was like a total whirlwind for everyone, I think.
So you were like, you know, you can't really complain about being overwhelmed when everyone there is just like, we have to say yes.
My God. Well, and especially like Rachel, especially like, I mean, you saw it. It's like the amount of things she was doing on that show were inhuman. Like it was just, it was so crazy.
Yes. I got to do a guest star on that show and it was just scenes with her and the entire time she was working on not just the scene, but the next episode and like constant conference with everyone.
Yeah.
I could not believe it. I was like, I'm just trying to keep my lines together.
I know.
And she has all this new, all the time.
Yeah. And it was like, kind of inspiring because I'd be, you know, like you feel overwhelmed or whatever. And then you're like, well, she's dealing with like 17 other things.
Right.
So I can totally do this.
Right.
You know?
Let's talk just a little bit about Rachel and Aline. I have been lucky enough to talk to Rachel on a podcast. I've interviewed her. I've interviewed Dave. I've interviewed Donalyn. You know, so I feel like I'm collecting the whole set.
Oh, you are. Yeah.
So this is very good.
Gotta find them all.
I think that you guys all have such a fantastic attitude and that I don't know if because it was your first TV experience, if you knew how unique it was, but it really felt like you guys were, maybe it's because of how quickly things had to fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like what we're talking about, like with episodic television being like making a new play and making new pages, everything had to be suited to you guys very, very quickly. They probably had to figure out who you were after they
really
hired
fast.
You.
Yeah, they're like, so who are you?
Right, what's going on?
Yeah.
So obviously, everyone had to be game, and it truly affected the show. You clearly all got along so well. But what was it like to be a part of that process in that first year when you were all figuring out what the show is? Because it's such a unique show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good question. And I think the answer is I don't know what that factor was that made everyone kind of just jump on board. But it's true.
Yeah.
But also, I wonder if it's, I think part of it, I think it was like a very special stew of like, you know, theater people who are the best people, you know, theater people meets sketch people because of Rachel and UCB improv people, which was also her world, meets, you know, fun like music video world meets total camp, you know, but also that sincerity that's in the show. So I don't know if it was because that was such a unique, weird, and just weird also. Just total just weirdos, you know, with like good senses of humor. So whatever that specific like ingredient, you know, recipe was, I don't know if that was what it was, but it definitely like, I feel like people like guest stars who would come on the show would be like, this is a unique situation. And we'd be, I mean, I don't know any better. Yeah. I'm like, is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had four seasons, right?
Four seasons, yeah.
And your character, Heather, was just one of my absolute favorites from the get-go. Oh. And had such a great journey, you know? Like, it was she had such great stories and was so different from everyone else.
Yeah.
Clearly.
That's a really
from
nice
the get-go.
So different.
She is different.
Yeah.
But, you know, also because it's almost like she was stuck in this world where people were going to express themselves through song,
she's like, what?
Yeah. And so I guess for somebody who did experimental theater, I mean, clearly you're a joy and up for having fun, but was there any part of you that was like, I just went from Juilliard and here I am, you know, like, you know, like singing and dancing in this crazy ass show?
I definitely could not have predicted that or expected that.
Well, because it's literally never been done on TV.
Right. And also for the audition, they were like, you can sing, but you don't have to sing. Like, I think certain characters, maybe in the pilot, it was like a requirement.
Right.
But for whatever reason, my breakdown, it was like, you don't have to sing. So I did sing and I was like, I feel fine singing. I'm not a singer, but I feel fine. And then it's like cut to
everyone's singing, bitches.
Yeah, everyone is singing. But it was this thing of like, you know, everyone just ended up also just going for it. Like, I do think it would have been different if there was like even one person in the whole time that like was like, no, I'm not going to rehearsal, or like, no, I don't want to do this, or like, you know, kind of pulled any kind of those moves. But everyone was just very like, it was very like
game
and just like
playing and rolling around on the floor.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of you came from that world where you do it for free and your agents won't let you, but you like, this is like why you show up, because you have a passion for it. And this was just like a new exercise of
100%.
Let's do musicals. Cause that was a lot of work. Like
it was in hindsight.
Every time I would watch that show, I would just think about the hours that you would, I mean, you know, sometimes in rehearsals for single cam television, it's like you rehearse for 10 minutes before you do the scene, right?
Totally.
You guys are in a recording studio. You're having to learn a song. You're having to learn choreography.
But like the irony is it's still in the same TV frame.
Yeah.
I mean, we ran into so many things because no one's really done this before. I mean, I guess like Glee and stuff, but that was covers.
Yes.
So you have that, like, you know, the song.
The reference of the song is already there.
It's already there. Yeah. Yeah. So this was just like the songwriting process and the song changing and all of that stuff. It's still happening in that TV frame, which is essentially just no time.
Right.
So sometimes we'd get the song, record the song that night, and then have rehearsal the next day and then shoot it the next day. So it was just like, so everything was fast.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of hours, but it was also that kind of like condensed intensity.
Which is also why you guys bonded and
probably
were such a great team.
Yeah. Cause it was just like, just a totally insane ride of like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, we're doing what? And I feel like everyone had to do something outside their comfort zone.
Right.
You know, whether it was like me, who's like, okay, now I'm like singing, you know, and stuff like that, or like Pete Gardner, who's like an improv king legend, but like he'd never danced before.
Yeah.
You know, and like these amazing like dancers like Vinny and Gabrielle, like, you know, doing like intense scenes and stuff, yeah. you know, and yeah. like being incredible. Like everyone just threw themselves into it and like very much just, I don't know, it was like sink or swim. We were yeah. like, let's swim and have a bubble bath.
Well, I think that your eclectic group is and everyone being game is really why so many different groups of people came to the show and loved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, why all those Hamilton mm-hmm. fans and Broadway fans really, really gave you the seal of approval right away, which is not easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Like mm-hmm. When you are doing the thing that people love, a lot of times you're going to get some haters.
Oh yeah.
And I felt like right away you guys were just getting love.
Yeah.
So I hope you felt that throughout the process.
We felt it and especially getting to do the live shows.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever make it to any of those?
No.
It was
I watched
crazy.
I watched the finale.
Oh, like,
I watched that and I was
it's
like,
insane.
Oh my
I mean,
God.
And until it's like I kind of had missed some live shows and then came on to do one kind of after the group had done the tour.
Right.
And they had told me, it's like, it's crazy. And I was like, okay. And then actually stepping onto the stage and seeing all these people that are just so excited and passionate right. about it was, it really like takes your breath away.
Because well,
like,
it's very rare what? To have that interaction with your audience when you're on a TV show or
yes.
a film. You don't get
you
to.
Don't get it. Yeah.
And so to have them all come to one place and mm-hmm. do the thing that you did and sing your song and, you know, it's pretty special.
It's special. I mean, it's like, it's kind of going back to like why, like I love theater so much and why it's so special and like why I'm so glad to be like doing another play at the right. Geffen is like that conversation between the audience and you as the performer yeah. is like why I wanted to get into it in the first place is just like, because it feels like it's a communication. It feels like it's like a giving back in a way of like, I'm giving to you and you're receiving it. And it's so important that you're here
right.
and that we're having this exchange and you're just as important as I am, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think you're so right. Like usually on TV or film, you do it and it's in this bubble and then it goes out into the world. And I mean, the weird part about film and TV is you never know when someone's watching your work.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas like theater, you can be like, oh yeah, we were in the theater on Wednesday night together. We yeah. shared that thing. And so to have the live shows with Crazy X was so special because of exactly what you just said.
Yeah. And you performed at Radio City Music Hall.
I know. I did the splits at Radio City Music Hall, which I'll remember forever. And I can't do the splits anymore.
That was the grand finale.
It's my
splits.
Swan song.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. Okay. So one of another part of why I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was so successful is because there were women leaders. And I think that anytime something is unique or has a unique voice, it's going to be more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Rachel, Aline, I think they were really giving a voice to female characters in a way that had never been done mm-hmm. on episodic television. And I just wonder what it was like as a female performer mm-hmm. to be a part of that and to see that firsthand.
I mean, I feel so lucky that that was like, that's the standard to now,
yeah.
which that I'm like comparing everything to because I realize like how special and unique it is and how much stronger our show was as a result of it,
yeah.
you know, as a result of certain ideas and storylines being not just like laughed at in the writer's room, but then like it's on set and we're doing it and we're speaking these lines that like normally wouldn't make it on air. Like
yeah.
so many times there were these moments of like, this is genuinely hilarious and I've never seen it on air before. Like,
yeah.
we're talking about periods and we're talking about like,
we're singing about,
we're
periods.
Full on singing about periods right now, you know? And like, we're saying all these things that like, aren't just jokes in the writer's room,
yeah.
but like, we're actually like acting them and getting to say them and have the full support of everyone on the creative team
yeah.
about it. And
yeah.
I think you're so right. I think projects are only stronger the more diversity you have and the more unique voices that you let speak. It's like it's only going to make your product stronger and mm-hmm. funnier and more exciting and go different places. just don't understand why you wouldn't do that.
Right.
Especially after coming off that experience, I'm like, there's no reason.
Absolutely.
There's no reason why.
Absolutely. And it's also a very diverse cast. As a person of color, how important is it for you to see that, you know, I mean, being a part of Hamilton, it kind of like was a game changer for the theater world. And I think that it continues to be something that is happening on TV, but it needs to go further.
Yeah.
But theater has always been the leader of the arts in general. And I think it's very important for theater to keep pushing that because those audiences have a better imagination.
Oh yeah. 100%,
you know, like they're ready to go there. Do you feel like, where do you think the state of it is right now?
Yeah.
And what does it mean to
you? With like film and TV kind of catching up with theater. I think right now I feel like we're in that stage. Like, you know, when you have a problem and you go to therapy and the first step is like acknowledging you have a problem and then you notice it and then you kind of overcompensate and you like are like, oh my God, I'm so aware of this thing.
Right.
I feel like as a, like a, I don't know, a country, as a, like, just a group of people, we're in that stage right now where we know there's a problem. Like, everyone, I mean, it's just clear there's a problem.
Right.
And we know that we want to do something about it and move forward, but we're in that awkward stage.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's uncomfortable. I mean, especially in like the film and TV world, it's like sometimes you just, I mean, as someone, I'm mixed, you know, and as some, like, it feels like I'm like trendy right now or something, or like, it's like, I don't know. I hear like a lot of people are saying like, oh, like, you know, you can get into rooms now because that's like, you know, what's fashionable or whatever. And I'm like, cool. That makes me feel great about my talent and my worth, right. You know. Well,
but the thing is that you have – no one can give a sob story about not getting into rooms because of this color of the skin if they're white. Because it's about the story that's being told, right?
Exactly.
And – It really is about what stories we need to tell next.
I think it, exactly.
And I don't think that they're the most important stories to be told right now. I think that people of color have a story that needs to be told immediately, today.
So many. And I think it's like, it's one of those things where you can go into rooms that like these huge decisions are being made and they're, it's all the same. It's all the same perspective that's making these big decisions is they're all these like older straight white men. And it's like, they can try like so much and so hard and like, you know, have all these like think tanks and stuff, but you're just never going to have the same story as someone different from you.
Right.
And I think people are slowly realizing that and they're like, oh, we have to make these changes, you know? But like there, I mean, I went to this event the other day that it's like, it was the Hollywood Reporter and they're like doing this initiative with like kids in schools in LA right now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we're going to like, you know, give you a scholarship. And then in 4 years, we're hoping you come work for us in just general Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
You know, just like, we're hoping you come like enter the entertainment industry as like people who are not straight white men, you know? And it's like, I firmly believe that that stuff is like, that's like 10, 15 years in the future.
That's laying a foundation for something to build on for.
Yeah. And so right now it is, I feel like it is that weird. I mean, we're moving in a really great direction and I hope we keep doing that. But it takes people, I mean, like Rachel and Aline, who were like, they made it an effort or they made it a requirement that, you know, we're going to get these people in the room. These are going to be the guest stars. These are going to be the background. Like every time there was like a background scene, they like made sure that it was the correct ethnic makeup of Southern California, which is very diverse, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it takes people, you know, making a little bit more of an effort than they're used to make sure that people are in the room that are not usually in the room.
Right.
Because they should be.
Right. And I think that you're right. It is about the leadership. It all comes from the top. And how wonderful that you are now, once again, at the Geffen in a room with a female director and writer. And, you know, like that you're having that experience. I am so grateful that you did this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I know you had to like stay after rehearsal and
happy to.
And I'm really excited to see the show. It's August 20th is when it starts.
Yes.
Starts performances.
Yes. Through the end of September.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
Thanks, Rory.
And that's Vella Lavelle. Thank you so much for listening to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Please remember to tell all of your friends about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, do all the things. And I'll see you next time on the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, brought to you by Podcast One.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Be sure to download new episodes every month right here on Podcast One, on the Podcast One app, or on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.